You're listening to the best.
9:30.
It's right here.
WFMD.
Waiting for you to finish. It's the Morning News Express. Always glad to see the movers and shakers of the city of Frederick and the county in our studios. And he is the number one mover and shaker in the city of Frederick. They call him the mayor. Mayor Michael O'Connor, good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine. A little tired. We were talking about he stayed up a little too late, maybe watching the Capitals win.
Luckily,
last night.
The game didn't go into overtime.
Oh, my goodness.
Or two
gracious.
Overtimes.
Yeah, right?
Because that's been known to happen when they play playoff hockey games.
I actually did go to bed when it was, I think, 5-2. And I'm like, okay.
You thought it should be safe?
I got this one in the bank, but you know what? About, 20 minutes lying in bed, I'm like, I got to check the score.
Well, I think the other thing is if they're ahead 5-2, you can be safe going to bed, because if it's not safe, you really don't want to be watching it.
I don't want to watch it anyway. Yeah, you're right. I have woken up before and went, oh, are you kidding me?
Hardest thing in sports. I told my daughter that. Hardest thing in sports is being a Washington Caps fan in the playoffs.
I know. There for a while I was sitting there and I'm like, I'm the reason why they were losing the first two games.
No, that's me.
I wasn't watching and I would tune in, and as soon as I tuned in, it would be a Columbus Blue Jacket score. I'm like, okay, I can't do this.
No, it was me, because I'm not a big Caps colors, rock the red, the whole thing. But I was wearing Capitals socks for both of those first two games. Stopped it. Stopped wearing red on game day.
Good job.
Yeah,
don't do that.
So it was me.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll blame you.
Every fan will take the blame for whatever superstition they've got.
Absolutely. So.
We don't have any superstitions in the city of Frederick.
That's good. We don't?
We do not govern really? By mythology. No.
Really? You don't? There's no ghost of Barbara Fritchie, if we... We don't drive past, the house and do some kind of a little dance or anything.
Well, Ron Engelberger. I know you do.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So Ron sent me some pictures from one of his ghost tours a couple of weeks ago. I'll pull them up on the device here and I'll let you look at them. Let me see what you see. Smudge on the lens, possibly, if I'm looking. I suppose with some creative visualization, it's a person standing in the window of the mayor's office late at night with sort of a ruffled tuxedo kind of a
nice
look. Just a
Roger Bertoni looking for his statue.
Or Thomas Johnson.
Now, see, somebody yelled at me the other day, because is it Roger Bertoni or Roger Bertoni?
I'm a Tawny guy.
I am, too.
Yeah, and I'm from here, so.
Yeah, me, too. When I talk
I think
to,
they call it Tawny Town.
They
always call it Tawny Avenue.
Well, I was having a conversation with Dave Conrad, and he said the reason why they called it Tawny. Is because George Washington had false teeth, and when he pronounced it Taney Town, he would spit out his teeth. So Tawny was easier for him to do. I don't know if that's necessarily true or not, but.
Dave Conrad is good at what he. There's no way he knew George Washington.
No way. He's pretty old. Have you ever gone in real quick, and then we'll get into the good stuff.
This is good stuff.
It is good stuff. It's not the stuff that you want to hear. Have you ever gone through the Civil War Medical Museum with a George Wunderlich ghost tour?
I've not done the George Wunderlich ghost tour. I have done the George Wunderlich Civil War Medicine tour.
Yes. Yeah. He actually let us in one night for my daughter's birthday, and we did a ghost tour at night, and that place is haunted. I mean, I'm not really big on spirits and stuff, but there's some strange things that happened in that place. So, it is what it is, right?
Did you observe anything with your own eyes and feel it while you were there?
There's a room where you walk in front of a diorama or something, and the light turns on when you walk in front of it, so they don't waste energy and stuff. It was kind of a sensor thing, and we were at the back of the room. And I hate doing it because we were big in this ghost hunting thing, and it was like when Ghost Hunters was just out. And I'm sitting there with my daughter. And we're at the back of the room sitting on a bench, and you know how you have your little microphone and you're trying to pick up EVPs or whatever. And I'm like, if there's anybody in here, please let your presence be known. And at that time, the lights turned on in that thing. And I'm like,
you don't think that's a helper just like in another room flipping
midnight.
A switch?
It was midnight. It was just if my
You don't think for effect he wouldn't pay
George
somebody to come
Wonder-
in?
I don't know. So we.
I'm Dana Scully. I'm a skeptic.
We tried to debunk it. I'm like going, okay, well, somehow we moved. So we waited for it to turn off, and then we're waving, and we're doing all kinds. No. And I asked George, and I said, that light turned on. And he goes, no, unless you walk in front of it, it will not turn on. It will not turn on. Oh, yeah, that's creepy. That is. I got to take a picture of that so we can. Can we share that?
I'll send it to you.
Yeah, send it to me and ask if we can use that. Is that property of Mr. Engelberger? Or?
I think this was sent to him by somebody who was on his tour, so he was happy to. Attached her photos taken
City
by
Hall?
A guest. So that's City Hall.
Is
that's
your office?
It's one of the upstairs windows, yes.
Okay.
At City Hall.
Okay. Wow.
So
that's kind of, well, you know, maybe you're being watched over, you know, and protected.
I haven't felt anything malevolent in there.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're a God-fearing young man, so.
I think
I think you would understand that. All right, we'll get into some of the stuff that we're going to talk about. We haven't talked to you since you released your budget. There's bulk trash. There's all kinds of stuff to talk about.
What?
Well, yeah. Hey, it's up to you. It's Morning News Express at WFMD. 6:22 at WFMD. It's the Morning News Express with the mayor of the city of Frederick, Mayor Michael O'Connor. All right, somebody told me. Now, this, I think they did it in jest because I asked online questions about, you know, if you had questions for the mayor.
Skunk apes?
Somebody wrote.
I've gotten a couple of emails about those this week.
Skunk?
Skunk apes.
I'm lost. Is there something I don't know about?
Apparently, it's another name for Bigfoot.
Oh. And
people are saying they're seeing these around town. These emails are coming late on Friday night, so I think it's possible that they're being driven by something other than an actual apparition.
Maybe they should stop buying spice.
And they want to know what the city's going to do about it.
Well, I'd like to know.
I'm doing it right now.
Okay. We're letting people know about the skunk apes. Can we form a patrol at nighttime? Can we start to, you know...
Knock yourself out.
Hey, I can call the Snipe Hunters of America Brigade, and they can come in and start looking for these guys as well.
The same people who look for the Snallygaster.
Yeah, right? The budget, we haven't talked to you. Somebody asked a question. They said, real quick, and this is just, they said, hey, did this one make bagels too? And if so, what's his favorite bagel? I'm like, that's the wrong mayor. It's the former guy who used to make the bagels. But do you like bagels?
I do. I like jalapeno bagels.
Well, who doesn't?
I like sun-dried tomato bagels.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you might want to open up a bagel shop as well. Can't get the other one to do it again.
Well, it's
too early in the morning.
I don't blame him.
Yeah. Last time we talked, it was the day before you set out the budget. You brought out the budget. It's 279 pages long. Now, I know that you were a numbers cruncher at your former job. So that means you like numbers. But is the budget... For the city, and I'm putting this in an elementary style terms, is it just a plug and play type of, or you know, plug in the numbers and just go on? It's like, okay, you know, most of the formula is already there, and you're just gonna, okay, we're gonna increase it 10%, 20%, we're gonna reduce, or do you have to go through line by line and go, okay, yes, no, and then, or does your staff do a lot of that and then help submit it?
So,
give them guidelines.
So we have a great budget and finance staff. Both our budget director, Katie Barkdahl, and our finance director, Jerry Coldflesh, have been award-winning for what it is that they do in terms of the numbers game. So in terms of budgeting, I rely very heavily on Katie's expertise. We like to jokingly refer to that giant page document as Katie's big book of numbers because she's really the numbers person. There is a lot within the budget of the city of Frederick that I would suggest is kind of baked in from the beginning. Unless you're going to try and make big sweeping changes in terms of the number of people that are working in the city of Frederick, that's the lion's share of the cost that we have. It's because it's what we do. Services in the city are provided by people. So whether it's plowing the streets or police officers or what happens at City Hall or in the planning department, it's all done by people. And so when you roll the people into the equation and you look at the work that needs to be done and you have your other fixed costs like electricity and fuel and all those other kinds of things, what you're counting on a year-over-year basis is that you've seen some expansion of the city's property tax base. Because expansion of the city's property tax base through new residential development, new commercial development, industrial, whatever it is where the new money comes from. that makes it possible to do service expansion. Because we know that every time we put a new development in, there is new street mileage that the city has to maintain and keep clean. Every new development brings curbs and gutters and streetlights and new intersections. We had our DPW Ops our Department of Public Works Operations budget presentation last night, and they present as part of what they do kind of a count of things. They're very good at counting what we have in the city of Frederick and things like miles of streets and sidewalks and those kinds of things. As the city grows, you have to maintain all of those things too. So you have to figure out what the trigger points are when it's time to expand, add staff to do more things. We hope that when you get to the end of all of that process that you've got, you know, a couple $100,000 maybe at the end that you have a chance to maybe try something new or implement a new program or begin to look at, you know, doing things in different ways.
Well, I like the fact that the city, I don't know who started it, the Saturday sweep up of the city. I'm thinking, wow, what a great opportunity to get people to go out there and clean the streets, and the city doesn't have to do it.
And they
make it look like a fun event.
It is Tom Sawyer at its best. That is the Downtown Frederick Partnership deserves all the credit for last Saturday's Bring a Broom Saturday.
Yeah. So, all right. So the budget itself is percentage-wise, how much over from last year?
I want to say this is where I'm not particularly good at like latching on to the important numbers that people want to know. I want to say it's between 4 and 5% more.
Okay.
And a portion of that increase is the result of being able to roll over some fund balance and put some fund balance that accumulated over the course of the last fiscal year and apply that to some one-time projects, whether it's capital projects or things that are actually within the operating budget of the city.
We'll have more with the mayor of the city of Frederick, Mayor Michael O'Connor, coming up on the Morning News Express. It's the Morning News Express, 6:34 at WFMD. All right, let's get down to it. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about with the mayor, Mike O'Connor, who's on the other end of the desk here. One of the things that I saw the other day, and we talked a little bit about, and I just think this is, you're having a conversation, and I just was, and that is the city of Frederick maybe joining a federal lawsuit against opioid manufacturers and distributors. And I want to know how and who approached you about that, why you think that it would be a conversation to have. And the only benefit I see of it is it's a way for somebody for the city and to just get a bunch of money.
So we had that conversation in closed session. So there are details about that consultation with legal counsel that I really can't get into on the air because we're not in a position yet to have made a decision. We're in a fact-finding mode to try and determine whether or not this would be something that it would be in the city's interest to do. We're trying to research the way these kinds of lawsuits, mass tort actions have occurred in other areas, what's happening with them. The best analogy that I can provide to this issue is the tobacco lawsuits, for example. And there isn't any question that a lot of lawyers do well with these kinds of actions. But there's also no denying that as a result of some of these mass tort actions, that there is a change in the behavior of the defendants in these actions. And that's really, in the end, what our hope would be as a city in having conversations in general. Take the issue of whether or not we join a legal action or not off the table. The conversations we're having now as a community about the opioid crisis and about the things that we're trying to do is about trying to change behaviors, trying to change behaviors of individuals, trying to change behaviors of us as a government and what we can provide in terms of service delivery to people who are addicted and dealing with these issues, change in behavior of physicians who prescribe opioids, and in some instances, not all, overprescribe opioids. The number that I heard the other day that for every person, there are 127 prescriptions, Allegheny County. This was an Allegheny County number, 127 prescriptions for opioids per 100 people. So that's more than one prescription per person,
right,
in the whole county. Well, most people don't even need one, much less some people needing two or three. So clearly there's an issue. And the pharmaceutical companies that have produced some of these have known for the longest time, there was this argument, well, these aren't addictive. You know, that was sort of the early argument. Well, we're prescribing these, but it's okay. It's not a problem. Well, when we've discovered that it is a problem, then there needs to be a change in behavior. And what we've perhaps not seen as quickly is once the problem was discovered, the behavior on the parts of the manufacturers or the prescribers or whatever it is hasn't changed as quickly. And so, like most things, it's going to take a multi-pronged approach. We have to increase our treatment and recovery abilities at the local level. And there has to be an effort to try and get a change in behavior in terms of the manufacturing, the processing, and the prescribing of these medications. So I don't know that this is the answer. I'm not even telling you that we're going to do it. Right. But we're looking because the public has come to us and said the city needs to have a role, and I agree. The city needs to play a role in how we deal with this crisis in our community.
Well, and for me, when you look at it, and manufacturers, if you use it a lot of times as prescribed, then it is, the efficacy is exactly what they say it is. If you overuse it or if you over-prescribe it, then that's where you're going to run into the problems. And then, of course, obviously, you're looking at if you look at heroin and other issues like that, there's no manufacturer making that. Those are people who are bringing that into the country. And I would encourage you to watch the Netflix series Dope and just watch the second episode about Baltimore and the heroin problem and the people who are selling it. They don't care.
But there is data that suggests that a percentage, not all, but some, a percentage of people who are now dealing with heroin issues first became addicted to prescription opioids.
Oh, absolutely. But you know what? We can go back to the whole legalization of marijuana, and you know, Frederick is now going to become they're having, how many pot dispensaries are we going to have? I am a very big proponent that pot is a gateway drug, because had I never done pot, I would have never snorted cocaine, and you can't tell me that it's not true, because it is true.
Well, I'm not going to try and make that argument. What I will say is that the medical cannabis industry has developed in
but
the
that
state
is
of Maryland.
Overprescribed as well.
I don't know.
If you're doing the research on opioids and you having the idea and the chat about maybe suing companies, you might want to look into that as well. I understand that there are some people who are using, and medical cannabis has been, and my opinions on that have changed a little bit on how it is effective for a lot of people in certain things, in the oils and certain things. But there are a lot of people who, the same thing with the opioids are getting the same thing with the medical marijuana. I gotta, my eye itches. Oh, here you go. You're going to have people who prescribe it and over-prescribe it and just do it because they know they're going to make money off of it. But we should with that now.
No, I don't think we are okay with that. I don't think anybody should ever be okay with someone who has the ability to write a prescription for a medication, writing that prescription simply because they can make money off it. I would say that regardless of whether you're prescribing medical cannabis or opioids, painkillers, antihistamines, heart medication, drug pressure, blood pressure medication, hypertension, whatever it might be, cholesterol. If you're overprescribing, you're overprescribing. And if you're giving people drugs, legal or otherwise, so that you can make money, I'm not sure that I don't think that's what we're supposed to be doing.
No, I agree with that. I'll agree with that. All right, we've got more with the mayor of the city of Frederick, Mayor Michael O'Connor, coming up on the Morning News Express. Let's get a look at your 9:30 WMD traffic. It's the Morning News Express, 6:43 at WFMD. Let's go to the phones. Vincent's on the phone. Vincent, welcome to the Morning News Express, and you're on with Mayor Michael O'Connor.
All right, good. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
So the reason I called is here I am preparing for my commute, and I hear this discussion. I know I think there's some prep in this, but I heard something about the medical marijuana and the gateway. But something people should understand is that the medical cannabis can be extracted into an oil and dispensed through a prescription. It's very different than what we're seeing or hearing, where you have essentially marijuana laws that allow people just to smoke marijuana regardless. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yes, sir.
If through a prescription, it's very different than what we're seeing or hearing, where you have essentially marijuana laws that allow people just to smoke marijuana regardless. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yes, sir.
I think if right. So I'm one of those citizens that's against that. I'm for the medical cannabis, but I'm against these open dispensaries that are allowing people just to smoke on the street. And it's such a contradiction to what others have done with the tobacco industry. All right. Now, with your effort to think about a lawsuit against the pharmaceuticals, my first question is, where's your priority? This is similar to what our attorney general is doing with frivolous lawsuits against a president he doesn't like. Okay, and it's not about you not liking the president. It's about what I'm thinking is a frivolous, or it's just the wrong direction for the city to take. And I'll say it this way: if people are fighting legitimate diseases, Maryland is putting in an inordinate amount of time on preventive type drugs after a heroin addict has overdosed. These pens that they use or they're supposed to carry, we put in an inordinate amount of money in therapy. And what comes after, because you can't help someone in just 30 days. It's almost a year to lifelong.
Lifelong.
And so, all right. So I'm just saying, I really disagree with this type of thought and this type of help when there's other people who are hardworking and doing their best. And here, you know, there's got to be a root cause that should be examined. And I think, one thing I heard from both of you or start to discuss is start hitting the root cause. Hit the dealers hard, hit the users hard. All right, and then let's talk about going for the pharmaceuticals and so forth. But, you know, interrupt or disrupt, you know, the distribution and the usage and come down hard on it. Go back with harder penalties. It's just I'm hearing things where it's like, well, let's go after the pharmaceuticals, got deep pockets, they're not doing it right. And then I heard, well, I don't have the evidence. So I'll stop there and I'm going to listen. Thanks.
No, I appreciate very much. I think the message in that is a valid one, which is that we need to be comprehensive in the way we look at it. So this would not in any way, shape, or form represent a single solution. I don't believe that this represents the answer to the issue. Where we are with heroin and opioids in our community means a multi-pronged approach. This may or may not have any impact. The city may or may not do this. Right. It really depends on a variety of factors. We'd have to consider the impact on us. Is it going to cost us money? So far, what we're hearing is no, it would not cost us money to potentially do this. Do we see some benefit at the end where the city could benefit from that? Absent seeing some benefit something we probably wouldn't do it. We don't know. We're still in the exploration phase. But our police are part of the issue. The healthcare community is part of the issue. The nonprofit community is part of the issue. This is a community issue, and we all have to figure out what our right role and responsibility is in dealing with this issue.
I agree. I will agree with that. There are, you know, and we do have a huge heroin issue problem or opioid problem in this
yeah.
county,
so I don't,
in
the
state, in this country. It's a problem. I foresee things. You know, when I see things like this, I automatically think of big government trying to get bigger, trying to get money somehow, and say, oh, well, we have this, and now we have to, you know, government grants, and the next thing, you know, and that's where I run into a problem. Government grabs money, they say it's for a wonderful cause, and then it ends up just being used for something else. I mean, we can talk about all the education money that was supposed to be used. I mean, we see it all the time on the lottery and things like that. Next thing you know, it's a stadium authority and gambling. You know, so I'm a little leery. I understand what you're trying to say, and I, you know, you're looking into it just to see. There is a problem. So, all right, we got more to talk about. Bulk trash. The conversation is, I never thought you guys didn't do bulk trash, but you don't do bulk trash, and you haven't done it for 8 years. I guess that was the, and now you're thinking about bringing it back.
We are. So what I held a public briefing, a media briefing yesterday, and what I said was, so we had a very successful FreeCycle roundup on Saturday. That was the program that replaced bulk trash in 2010 was the last time we ran bulk trash. We didn't start the FreeCycle roundup until maybe 2011 or 2012, which was the idea of how do we afford our residents an opportunity to get rid of large things that they don't want or need anymore without them having to transport them to the dump and potentially, you know, the costs that are associated with that when some of these things may in fact be reclaimable, reusable, recyclable. The conversation that I want to have is there a way to do some sort of a curbside collection of bulk goods that has to look substantially different than the last program that the city ran. And I rode with our public works folks in 2010 when we ran that program the last time. An awful lot of things put out for bulk trash that were recyclable, that could have been reused or reclaimed or donated. And because of the way that program was run, our folks didn't really have much choice but to take perfectly good chairs and perfectly good pieces of furniture and chuck them in the back of a trash truck, grind them into whatever, take them to the landfill and dump them. And it's not cost effective. It's certainly not environmentally or socially sound policy to do it that way. And so the conversation I want to have is, how can we perhaps change the way in which a bulk collection or a bulk goods program could work that still allows for people who maybe don't have the means to transport items themselves to be able to have access to a resource to do that, but do it in a way that, from my perspective, is economically, environmentally conscious.
Just make sure that everybody knows, because I know a lot of guys who are pickers, and they drive around with their trailers and trucks, and they'll grab it before I don't know if that's against the law or not.
I don't believe that it is, and I think this is one of the things that people have really liked about that program in the past, was it was a great opportunity if you wanted to find something. The problem was, so much stuff got put at the curb.
Mm-hmm.
Things that could have been disposed of in a normal method, and things that could have been recycled or reused or reclaimed in some other way, but that program doesn't necessarily allow for an easy way. You think about the size of the city of Frederick and asking Goodwill, okay, Goodwill, drive every street in the city of Frederick and find all the good stuff that you need. It doesn't work. So an awful lot of stuff that could have been reclaimed ends up in the landfill, and I just don't think that's the right approach that we want to take either. So we need to talk about. I'm open to the conversation. People have said repeatedly, bring back something, and so I want to see what we can do and determine how we do it in a way that is both economically and environmentally responsible.
All right, we got to take a break. Then we got somebody hanging on the line. We'll talk to them coming up on the Morning News Express. But first, I know we're a little late. 6:51. Here's the traffic with Diana Gibson. 6:52 at WFMD. It's the Morning News Express. Let's wrap up our conversation with the mayor of the city of Frederick, Mayor Michael O'Connor. I mean, so much stuff to talk about. Let's see, page number two. I see today or tomorrow you're going to be going into a meeting to discuss parking violations, whether or not the fees or if you're going to reset those. And I know that's been an argument because people complain about cost of parking. And, you know, now I guess maybe the violations, or is this about cost of parking?
This is on an annual basis. We review our fees as part of the budget process. And so we've reached the point in the process where it's time for us to sort of look at our fee schedule, a master fee schedule that we have in the city of Frederick, and try and determine whether or not we want to make any modifications to the fines for things like parking in front of a fire hydrant or parking in a handicapped space. This board of aldermen, you know, majority, three of the five of them who are new, this is their first opportunity to sort of run through these things. So these kinds of annual checkpoints are good opportunities for them to weigh in on the policy questions that sit behind these things. We're not making any substantial recommendations relative to changes to these. The parking department hasn't made any.
Why do we have a varying parking meter costs? It's more expensive on certain parts of Market Street, and it's not on other parts of streets in Frederick. There's different costs. If you want to, say, park for an hour, it could cost you $2 one place, and it's only going to cost you $1 another place, not excluding the parking decks.
A kind of a dynamic parking structure is not uncommon in communities, because you're trying to ensure that the prime spaces do roll and turn over. It's a supply and demand question more than anything else. Something that's in higher demand, and certainly those spaces that are located in our core are in higher demand than the ones that may be located on the edges.
Real quick, let's see, what else do I got here? We know the budget. I'm going to ask this question, and there was a county funds kept $100,000 away from the airport. There was $100,000 not given to the city of Frederick for the airport. How do we make up that, or is that just money that we're going to just go up?
So we have always had support from Frederick County on the capital side where the airport is concerned. So we do a runway extension, or we put up a fence, or we do anything out there that's capital related. Those capital expenses for the airport are reimbursed to the city at 90% federal funds, 5% Maryland Aviation Administration funds, and then 2.5% and 2.5% from the city and the county. What the county has not done, in my recollection, is ever provide operating support to the airport. So the request was a request for $100,000 of annual operating support to the airport. We know we're going to get the capital support when we're doing those capital projects. What we were looking for was operating support. It was a new request, and we will continue to make that request to the county because we believe the airport is the kind of facility that should be supported on an operational level by both city and county.
This was on my list of questions, but somebody sent it in at 301-694-9363, 301-694-WFMD. Can you ask the mayor? And we got like a minute. Can you ask the mayor why he needs extra positions to work in his office when his predecessors only needed one? And that's from a story that you got the okay to hire, fill three positions in your office.
It is my belief that if we are to accomplish what I want to accomplish, that the extra personnel will be well allocated in support of both my objectives and the objectives of the Board of Aldermen. And you can make the argument, and I certainly heard people say that, that a lot of what we've done over the last 8-10 years was sort of a hold steady. And if we're going to take steps and make forward progress, then perhaps we need some staff in place to help move those things forward. So to me, this was an opportunity to look at the structure of the mayor's office. I've spent now 3+ months, almost 4 months, sort of operating in a skeleton capacity, intentionally to sort of see where are the stress points. And I believe that the addition of these individuals will help move the city forward, will help move what we're trying to accomplish. I'm pleased that the Board of Aldermen accepted that justification and supported the addition of these individuals.
Mayor Michael O'Connor, appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Squeezed in a whole lot of stuff. 657 at W.